Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. With over 200,000 locations throughout the U.S. and offering 12,000 different types of batteries, stop into your local Interstate Battery store today and let them help you find the right batteries for your everyday life.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting, the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet, chasing bear. This is the second podcast in our Montana tour as Colby Moorhead and I come back from a spring bear hunt in Montana pulling our mules. We got to stop in Cody, Wyoming at the headquarters of Best of the West and Husqvarna Optics and talk to my good friend Jim Sessions. He talks about some of his western hunting and the products and what Best of the West is, and also about Husqvarna Optics. You're going to learn some stuff about long-range shooting, and you're going to learn some stuff that you probably haven't thought about inside of this movement, quote-unquote, about long-range shooting. And according to Jim and Best of the West guys, it's really just about becoming more accurate. And that's what it's about. It's not about trying to dump an animal at the longest range as possible. These guys are all about precision, accuracy. And why wouldn't you have the most accurate, most precise gun possible when you're hunting, especially out west? Jim and I hunted together a couple of years ago. I've learned a ton from Jim. He is a veteran mountain hunter. I mean, veteran. Jim goes into the backcountry of Wyoming on mules and horses and doesn't even carry a GPS, and they're getting 30 miles plus off the roads, staying back there for extended periods of time on elk and sheep hunts and all kind of stuff. Jim is just an incredible guy and a great wealth of information about the West and about long-range shooting, about optics. We had a great conversation with he and Jared Peterson, who also works there at Best of the West. I want to remind you again that you can help the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast and YouTube channel by checking out our Patreon account. Patreon is a way that you can give back for this free content. And like I always say, you can subscribe to the magazine to support us, which is a fantastic way. But if you don't want to do that, you could become a Patreon supporter. So check out the Bear Hunting Magazine Patreon account. Without further ado, let's check out this conversation with my friend Jim Sessions. Welcome to the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. We are in Cody, Wyoming today. We're on our way back from a Montana bear hunt, and we had to stop in Cody, and we ran into some weather that I was not expecting. When we left Missoula, Montana this morning, it was cool in the morning, but it was going to get up to like 60 degrees, sunshine, and that's what we've been bear hunting in, Jim. Anyway, we got to Cody, and it's snowing.
Well, it's May 7th, and I just talked to my wife on the phone. I live in Meteetse, Wyoming, and she said there's about 2 inches on the ground at our house. So
is that right?
That's really not that unusual here in the Rocky Mountain West this time of year.
Wow. Well, let me introduce who. Let me tell where we are, and then introduce my guests here. But we're at the Best of the West in Husqvarna World Headquarters.
That's right. That's correct.
That's right. And I've got Jim Sessions here. Jim is he's one of the big dogs here at Best of the West. That's a good way to describe you, right?
Sure, that works for me.
and then I've got Jared Peterson. And so, Jared, we'll get into what you do here in a minute. But so to give you a little background, Jim and I have known each other for several years now, and we bear hunted in the spring of 2017. I drove up to Cody, Wyoming, and then we took your mules and horses and went up into northwest Montana for 6 days. And I was telling Colby that I learned a ton from you, Jim, about how to handle equines in the backcountry. Like, for real. I mean, I pretty much came from zero to having to understand how to manage. We're managing mules, but you had horses and mules.
Right.
I mean, even from the simple logistics of how long can these animals ride in a trailer? How often do you have to get them out and water them? When you're, you know, real simple stuff like that, that maybe if you'd been around it your whole life, you'd understand. But so on this Montana trip, you know, I took my mules, came all the way from Arkansas, heck of a trip, 24 hours. And we ended up stopping about every 8 to 10 hours, let them out. We've let them overnight. We've split the trip up. Tonight we're going to overnight them.
Right.
And let them kind of, you know, have that some good feed and good water and then head home tomorrow.
Yeah, most people don't realize the logistics and just finding a place to stay overnight where you can unload your animals and keep them for a night. And
yeah.
It's not like you're just pulling into the Holiday Inn and
no kidding.
Can I put my mules out in the parking lot? That yeah. really doesn't work.
Well, you don't know how when we drove from here to Missoula, and we drove. I can't remember why this happened, but we slept on the side of the road. Do you
yeah.
remember that?
Yeah, I've done that a lot.
I mean, yeah. and I mean it was perfect, but I was like, okay, this is the way this is going to roll. I mean, we couldn't find a place to stay where we could put the mules. So you just found a wide spot in the ditch and said, we'll sleep here.
Sure. Yeah. I've done that a lot.
Jim rolled out his tarp, had it right there, dumped his sleeping bag, and went to sleep. I went up in the woods a little ways and hung my – I had a little
hammock.
Little hammock.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is the way this – so I learned a ton, man.
Good.
And then do you remember – well – of course, you remember it. Your big 50-foot, big cotton, your big ropes that you carried in the backcountry.
Yeah.
To tie the animals up to let them graze. Well, I did the same thing. I went and bought a couple of big, heavy ropes with big, heavy hardware to carry back in. Because when you get back in the backcountry with equines, you're not hauling feed in, or we didn't, and I didn't want to on this trip either. So, you know, you tether these animals out, and you got to have something absolutely secure, because the last thing you want to do is lose them in the backcountry.
Like we did the one time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it works out well, and you know, that the animals, they're going to be safe. It does take a little time, typically, for an animal to learn how to manage that rope and
right.
where he's not going to get in a bind and hurt himself or,
yeah.
You know, get him. A bad rope burn on his leg or that kind of thing, but they learn to manage him pretty quick, especially mules, and
yeah.
It's a good system that works
yeah.
well.
Yeah. So you give us a little bit of history about your Western hunting, Jim, and what you, and I know that you prefer to hunt in the backcountry using equine animals. I mean, that's your preferred method, but just you being a Wyoming native, you have access to an incredible, incredible amount of different types of game. I mean, from where you live, you can head in just about any direction and be in some of the best big game hunting in the lower 48.
We're very fortunate right here in Cody. I believe it's the best of what's left. And that's not to say that we get a hunt our preferred area every year by any
right.
means. The competition for highly sought-after tags seems to be increasing every year. There's a number of issues that are going on right here in the northwestern Wyoming in the Cody area. We've got a tremendous predator problem, and I'm not just talking about the wolves. We've got a overabundance of grizzlies that are basically at capacity within the habitat.
Right.
And, you know, they've tried to implement some management options in place, and that's been shot down in the courts. But we've still got some great hunting, big game hunting. Some of our areas, the elk hunting, I think it's the best elk hunting on the planet when you factor in all the measures. to include that backcountry wilderness experience, the quality of the bulls, the amount of game. It's just a fabulous, fabulous hunt. We've got a big variety. We've got antelope. We've got white-tailed deer. We've got mule deer. We've got bighorn sheep. We've got elk, mountain goat, some Shivers moose still in this area. And then, of course, we've got the black bear, the lion, mountain lion, and, like I said, an abundance of grizzly
bears. Is that not – I mean, I guess that's pretty much all the big game. You wouldn't have caribou. You wouldn't have native – natural. Well, I mean, at one time there were lots of bison here, but you wouldn't have a wild herd of bison.
We actually have some bison. In fact, last year they had a wild bison hunt right up the North Fork of the Shoshone River here, where they, I think they issued three or four tags.
Okay.
Those are just some old bulls that have moved out of Yellowstone.
Okay.
Just on the overside north of Jackson Hole, there is a regulated bison hunt, free range bison, and I was very fortunate. About 10-11 years ago, I drew that tag.
Oh, really?
And was able to harvest an incredible animal, 10 year old bull.
Mm.
And people think, oh, it's kind of an easy hunt, it's a gimme hunt, but I actually went three different times to find the bison that I actually wanted to shoot. And we had to hunt. We had to look for him and try to find him. At the time that I had the tag, you had to hunt National Forest only.
Mm.
And they've changed that since then, that you can hunt on the National Elk Refuge and the forest, but you can't hunt Grand Teton Park. Well, these bison are not stupid, and they've found out over the years, and with some help from anti-hunters, that they need to stay in the national park.
Mm.
So they absolutely need to hunt those bison to keep them within the carrying capacity of that habitat.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what we're all about. Hunting is conservation, and we know it, and our game and fish professionals know it, and that's how we keep things in check within the limitations of the habitat.
Yeah. Going back to all the different species of big game, I mean, am I right in saying the only thing you don't have here is caribou and, I mean, some of the, like, Sitka blacktail and different things? I mean, you got mule deer, whitetail, antelope, goats, lions, bears, bison, elk, moose. I mean, that's all there is.
Sheep. I mean,
sheep. You wouldn't have all the different species of sheep, but you got bighorn sheep here.
Bighorn sheep.
I mean, that's
here.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Now you've taken bighorn sheep in Wyoming.
Yeah, I've had two licenses in my lifetime, and my first tag, I didn't harvest a ram. It was down in southeastern Wyoming, and they'd actually had a die off, and I hunted a long time but didn't get one. And then I drew another tag in 1997.
Okay.
And harvested a ram. And I've been on a number of sheep hunts through the years. Done some guiding and also helped a number of friends. And sheep hunting is a special type of hunting.
Yeah. So you have, and this is what I've known about you. So this Wyoming bighorn sheep tag is like, you know, you've got it twice, but I mean, pretty much a once in a lifetime tag, would you say?
Pretty much for almost all people involved, especially since they've implemented a preference point system.
Right.
And right now, for most of the sheep areas in Wyoming, it's taking anywhere from 17 to 22 preference points to draw the tag, and you can only accumulate one preference point a year.
So
you can see that it's
pretty much a once in a lifetime deal,
right?
And then, so what you've done though is you know people that draw this tag, and you've helped them. I've taken
a number of friends on hunts, and I've also guided some sheep hunts for John Porter at Morning Creek Outfitters.
Man, that's incredible, because you get the same experience. I mean, it's like you've been on, I don't know how many sheep hunts you've been on, but I mean, you've had that experience X number of times. Oh. I mean, and it's, I know it's probably just as, I mean, maybe not as meaningful, might be fooling yourself to say that, but super meaningful just to be there, to be a part of the hunt.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
I'm at in all honesty, I'm 58 years old, and I'm in the latter years of my hunting career, and I can honestly say I get as much satisfaction out of taking someone and helping them be successful, whether it's a big bull elk or a bighorn ram, as if I had the tag myself.
Yeah.
And I think most hunters graduate through that process,
yeah.
You know, that you get where you want to just be successful, and then you get, well, I don't want to shoot anything unless it's a big, mature 6-point bull or a 30-inch buck or whatever the case may be. And then it just kind of, I'd almost call it not declines, but your need to harvest an animal somewhat lessens.
Yeah, and, I understand it.
And you want to help others. And I've had some great opportunities with young people and my son and daughter. And, you know, here at Best of the West, we're heavily involved with a number of youth hunting organizations. Polestar Outdoors is one. And Camo Dreams Foundation. What are a couple of the others, Jared?
But
we're active in that, because we believe in what they're doing, whether it's kids with life-threatening illness or it's Polestar Outdoors, that it's just a belief of how important it is to get young people in the outdoors, fishing and hunting, and just that whole experience.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's really incredible. Well, that's a good place for us to jump in and tell us about Best of the West in Husqvarna. So these, I guess they're technically, I mean, they're the same business, but different businesses. Maybe just give for somebody who wouldn't know anything about Best of the West or Husqvarna, kind of give us some insight, and then we'll have some specific questions. Jared will tell us about maybe the gun, the new guns that he's been working on.
Sure. Best of the West, I believe it started in 1999 as Bridger Trail Video.
Okay.
Jack Peterson was the founder of the company. And then and at that point it was putting together some hunting videos.
Mm.
And then as Jack moved into the industry and moved forward, I believe in 2004, the actual Best of the West television show started production. And Best of the West has always been on the cutting edge of what we'll call the long-range revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the heat for it in the start, and then people began to see that we weren't just about how far we could shoot at an animal. We were about precision accuracy and whatever the range.
Right.
And that's we've held that belief throughout the company history. But 2008, Husqvarna Optics was unveiled, and it started. It started as an optique company, and I mean that as singular. And for 4 years, Husqvarna had one optic, and that was a 5-20x50.
Okay.
And as we've moved through this journey, we've had our ups and downs, as most small businesses do, trials, tribulations, and things. But each year we become stronger, just strong-willed and want to see a company succeed. And we've in Cody, Wyoming. We've kind of settled into our location out here on the West Strip, and we get a lot of visitors each year. We're on the road to the east entrance of Yellowstone, or people coming from the east entrance of Yellowstone. And just last summer, we finally put up signs out front, and that significantly increased our traffic flow. But the television show, we've always tried to, our core programming or what we like to aspire to is remote backcountry hunting. And it can be backpacking. Jared does some backpack hunting, or it can be the use of horses and mules to get into some real remote country.
Yeah.
And it's a difficult task to put together a television show, all the logistics and the expenses and all of that, but it's still, I believe, our best shows. And I got to qualify that. We had a show that we did with Polestar Outdoors this year that was very compelling, touching show that, in my opinion, was hard to beat. But we still do a lot of the backcountry elk, mule deer, Rocky Mountain goat, bighorn sheep.
Right.
That's our core. We've been fortunate in that a number of groups of our field hosts have been able to go to Africa, New Zealand, Tajikistan, some other places all over the world to participate in hunts. We've also done a number of hunts in both Canada and Alaska. So, but as the company has evolved, we've built partnerships. One of the key things we're doing right now is we've evolved in our optics line, where I believe we have 6 models of rifle scopes. We also have a crossbow scope that it basically follows the same principles. The turret on that crossbow scope matches the exact trajectory of that bolt.
Right.
And we base it on the bolt weight plus the speed.
Right.
And we build a turret that takes you out. And if that whitetail buck's at 54 yards, you dial that turret to 54 yards.
Yeah.
And you hold on. And that's becoming more and more popular. You know, a lot of the guys are buying these high-end crossbows, and
more expensive than rifles sometimes.
Yeah,
they can be. They're putting a Husqvarna scope on it,
right? Yeah. So for somebody, especially back east, that may not even understand turrets, Husqvarna scopes are known for their custom turrets. And so you guys are, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys are the only ones in the industry that use actual yards on the custom turret rather than MOA. So what that would mean is that when there's a dial on top of the scope, you range a deer, a bear at 380 yards, you can dial that turret to, well, let's say 350.
375.
You dial that turret literally to 375 and put the crosshairs right on. Typically in long range shooting, I was talking to guys this week while we were bear hunting. I was quizzing them about their guns and stuff, and I was like, what do you do if you shoot at 400 yards? And he's like, oh, I know the trajectory, and I hold over. And I was just like, man, I don't hold over.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it. There's no guessing. You get the range, you dial in the yardage, you put the crosshairs where you want to hit, and that's where it hits. And so, and all that stuff is so common to you guys that are long-range shooting all the time. And just in the last 4 years, I have been indoctrinated into turrets and Husqvarna scopes and you're in the rifle systems, which I want to talk about. But I think there's a lot of people, Jim, that don't even understand what a custom turret is. And well, so that's what you guys are known for.
And I'm going to let Jared speak to this a little bit, because Jared does a lot of the actual turret engraving once once he receives actual drop data from a given rifle and load. I think there are other companies that will build a yardage turret for another brand of scope. What separates us is we have a yardage turret for the distance or the elevation.
Right.
And what separates us is we have an actual wind hold that corresponds to a given distance.
Okay.
And it tells you at 500 yards, I need to hold 2 minutes into the wind based on a 10-mile-an-hour full value crosswind.
So there's hashes in the scope going out both sides on the on the lateral cross of the crosshair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of different methods of compensating for both distance and wind. But we have what we call the Husqvarna advantage. And what that is we can range our target, whether it's 625 yards, we can range the distance, dial to it, and then hold wind, if applicable, right in the reticle of our scope,
right,
based on what it's telling us on the actual turret.
Right.
And typically, you know, we can have 2 to 3 shots downrange, while the MOA guy or the mill guy or the electronic guy trying to find a firing solution via his scope and his cell phone is trying to find their dope. And that's just the truth.
Wait, now
of the
tell map. Me what dope is. The good kind.
Dope is
like that terminology.
Data on previous engagement.
Yeah, it's an acronym.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
An acronym. There we go. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You know, so they're just trying to find their firing solution.
Got it.
What they feel is their firing solution.
Yeah.
And there's advantages and disadvantages to each method. But for a real world hunting situation where time many times is of the essence.
Your system is simple and
it's
quick.
It's simple. We're not. You know, when it's all going down and the excitement factor's there, the simpler you can keep it,
yes,
the better off you are.
Yes.
Especially people that don't do this day in and day out.
Yeah.
They can see, oh, there's 450. They dial to 450. They're not trying to get, oh, that's going to take 12 minutes to get there or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, but Jared can explain more about what we require to laser engrave a custom turret for a customer's rifle and the ammunition.
So someone could have their own rifle, and they could collect data, and that's what you can tell us about. And then you could build them a custom turret that would fit on a scope.
Yeah. Yeah, there's actually two ways to find your data to make your turret accurate. The first one, which we use on all of our rifles, is we actually go shoot the rifle. We count how many clicks it is to each distance. So say we shoot at 500 yards, we count how many clicks it takes to get to 500 and then to 1,000 yards. Another way is we get some other rifle manufacturers that use our scopes. They'll actually collect their data by truing their velocity and truing their BCs, which that'll work as well, as long as you're pretty good at reloading and all that. But just going off your BC and your velocity off of factory ammunition usually isn't that accurate.
Mm, yeah. And so the actual data that you're collecting, and I've done this, I think, twice for rifles. Now I'm shooting one of the rifle systems, which you guys set up. But so you're for, in layman's terms, for someone who's not done it before, you're taking a shot at, let's say, 200 yards. You're zeroing the gun at 200 yards, and then you're shooting again at 300. How many data points do you need? Just two?
We're looking for two. We're actually improving our program where we'll have three data points.
Okay.
Typically, at a 200-yard zero, we want a data collection or a click value at 500 and 950.
Mm-hmm. So you're shooting at those distances and measuring the distance of bullet drop.
Yeah.
Through clicks.
Through the click value of the scope. And I'll use like a typical data for a 7 Remington Magnum. from one of our rifles here. It'll take 20 clicks to get to 500, and it'll take 60 clicks to get to 950.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're not actually measuring inches of drop. You're measuring clicks to to get the bullet to
And what that allows us to do is it verifies that turret is matching the trajectory of that individual rifle and the ammunition that they're using.
Right.
And
rifles vary. Physics.
Yeah. Rifles vary. We can't just build, we need a turret. Tell Jared we need a turret for a 7 mag shooting a 180 grain ELDM bullet. And he says, I've got that turret already built. Well, from rifle to rifle, there can be differences.
Why is that? That makes no sense. With the precision machining and all the work that goes into a rifle, where is the variation in the physical mechanics of that gun that make it different, Jim?
Well, even with the machining that goes on, there can be 1-2 click differences at 950 or even 500. Yes. Barrel length can make a difference. You know, we might have one that's a 26-inch barrel and one that's a 22-inch barrel, like a Mountain Scout rifle.
Right.
So we have to...
But I'm saying even with two identical rifles, they could shoot different.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's just the micro... I don't even know the increments to use, but the smallest, most minuscule differences in that gun make it shoot different.
Yeah, yeah. How the riflings are cut, the tolerances within the riflings, the chamber. There's a number of things, and we try to be very, very consistent. But even then, you're going to have slight differences in. And you know, at 500 yards, one click equates to, you know, what is it, about an inch and two-thirds?
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Okay.
So it when you're talking that far out, you know, but we want to build a turret that is as accurate and matches the trajectory of that rifle load as close as possible.
Right.
We're not into the guessing game.
So you got to collect, and all that starts with accurate data.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got to have absolutely accurate data. Now, you guys will, like say somebody had a gun, they could send that gun here and you guys would collect data for them. I mean,
yeah,
that's possible.
We do 400 to 500 what we call scope mount jobs a year.
Okay.
And that's customers sending in everything from Brownings to Weatherby's and everything in between.
Let me clarify something right here, because when we talked about what Best of the West is, we talked about the television show, but let's go ahead and just say Best of the West is a television show, but you guys have moved into building custom rifles.
So
you guys were hunting the West. You guys were Western big game hunters. You saw that you needed precision guns, long range. And so that evolved into, so you're a television show, you're a custom rifle manufacturer. And then the Husqvarna branch of this business is optics. So that branches out really what you are.
And there's another big component of this that we were forced into simply because we need consistent ammunition.
Okay.
And that was, we build custom ammunition here. And we have a partnership with Hornaday where we use some of their precision hunter ammunition and their match ammunition in some of our builds.
Yeah.
But
wanted control of the whole system.
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah.
To maintain that accuracy level.
Right.
It's not just like we build you a turret and then you go to a super discount store and go get you a box of
Corlox.
Whatever ammunition you want to talk about.
Right.
And think that you got at that point your turret is no longer valid. No.
Right.
So it's about the ethics of it. It's about the precision accuracy of it.
Right.
Whether it's 300 yards and being able to hit a quarter, or it's extended distance at 700 yards and you can place a bullet right in the front shoulder of that bull elk and drop him in his tracks. That's what we want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell me about the rifle systems. So we've talked about the optics, custom turret. We've talked about how someone could use your they can use Husqvarna scope on any rifle that they've got, but really the bread and butter of what you guys offer is how many packages do you have now of rifle systems?
We have what I will call four main models of rifles, and that would be our Hunter Elite series, which is our most value price rifle.
And that's what I'm shooting.
Yes. Yep. We have a Mountain Hunter and a Mountain Scout.
Okay.
And those are built around a sporter style stock.
Yeah.
We aspire to get them as light as possible within reason. You start getting too light and you're going the wrong direction.
Okay.
In my opinion, you get below 7 pounds scoped weight, you're going in the wrong direction.
Really?
Yeah.
For that real accuracy.
For accuracy, and especially accuracy at distance.
Yeah.
And then we have our signature series rifle, and we have two actual stocks. We have one that's our regular signature series carbon fiber stock, and then we have our adjustable cheek piece signature series.
So you guys, pretty much right here in Cody, are building these guns from scratch. I mean, for the most part. I mean, these guns are... Now, there's different actions that are inside the guns that I guess you're getting from custom manufacturers, the triggers. But, I mean, these are totally 100% custom guns. So somebody could call down here and absolutely customize a gun. You would build it for them. You would sight it in for them. You'd gather the data for them. You'd validate the data. You'd build the turret, and you'd send them a gun in a – what kind of gun cases do you have?
Well, we send a custom SKB case.
SKB case. I mean, like, you get it, and you're ready to go. I mean, you need to shoot it. You need to
– They need to take it out and shoot it, because even going through all those processes, there can be slight differences in how I – hold a rifle, or Jared holds a rifle versus the customer, and they may have to adjust the zero, the 200-yard zero, one click, maybe a click right or left.
I see.
So they need to get their gun, go out and shoot it, and be comfortable with it, and build confidence with it.
Am I correct in saying the terminology that you guys use for that is a rifle system? So you're not just buying a rifle. You're buying the whole system. You're buying.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when I got my Hunter Elite, I mean, you had the bullets. I mean, you guys had the ammunition was already. I mean, you said this gun shoots this ammunition best. Mm-hmm. And I get that ammunition for you guys. I need to get some ammunition while I'm here. Actually, we about ran out of shells in Montana.
Right.
but so, I mean, to me, that's an incredible package to be able to have a gun like that. Because most people could never build that on their own. I mean, let's face it, there are people that can and do. I mean, that's kind of the long-range world.
Sure.
But for somebody like me, I'm never going to have the skill to build that gun. But I can get it from you. I mean, it's pretty incredible opportunity for people.
And it's a unique, I'll call it a methodology that we build a complete shooting system.
Yeah.
Because most, even today, you go buy a rifle and then you pick out the optic you want to put on that rifle, and then you got the whole process of properly mounting it and going out and shooting and doing all that thing. So, yes, a customer, they get a turnkey system. It's ready to go when they get it from us. And we feel that's catching on, where a lot of people just don't have the time to go through that whole process, but they have the money for us to do that process for them. Even the scope mount jobs that we've talked about before, they may have their Browning Hell's Canyon or their Remington 700 that is a good shooting rifle. But when we get one of a scope mount in, we qualify that rifle, because if that rifle isn't a 1 minute gun or close to it, minute and a half gun at the most, it really doesn't do a lot of good for us to put a Husqvarna scope on it.
Put this precision scope on it when the gun won't shoot that good.
They're not going to be happy with it.
Yeah.
So some of these guns we may have to bed that come in. We may have to rebarrel. We may have to do a number of things to get them to shoot. But it's a good process to get introduced into precision accuracy with their own firearm. And we do 400 or 500 of those scope mount jobs a year.
Yeah. And what I've seen here, and I've been here several times, and I mean, you guys are the experts of long range shooting, and there are people here you guys will work through stuff with people. Somebody sends a rifle, just like you said. I mean, you might tell this guy, hey, this is what you need to do to this gun to make it what you want. We can help you do that. I mean, the customer service that you guys would provide, I would say, is super valuable.
It is. And you know, we're a full-service gunsmithing shop.
Yeah.
And most customers, they don't even doubt, you know, when we tell them, this is what we're going to need to do to this gun. There's no question. They just say, do what needs done. I need an accurate gun. And, you know, what it costs to go hunting anymore, the most important tool you have besides your own mind is your rifle. And it's just a good investment, whether it's a scope mount job or a new rifle, in your future hunting success.
Yeah.
It's the best investment you can make in your future hunting success.
That's true. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You go into a shot, you dial that turret to 350 yards, and you're laid out prone, and your crosshair staying right on that vital zone, and there's no question in your mind that if I choose to take that animal, he's going down.
Yeah.
And when I first started hunting, every shot was a doubt. It just was.
Yeah.
And right. I would have given anything to learn this. And when I first started hunting, and the opportunities I had that ended up missed opportunities, because I never learned to shoot. I never learned about ballistics. I never learned about a lot of things. So it helps when we do shooting schools, which,
That's another thing
we
you
do all
hadn't,
over the
we
country.
Hadn't talked about.
Yeah, we do schools all over, teaching the principles of long range and showcasing the equipment and the products. We just had a team of guys they were in West Virginia, Florida, Pennsylvania. Wade's still in Michigan right now. They taught over 200 students over the last month.
Really?
And we do 4 shooting schools here in Cody, May, June, July, and August.
Mm.
2-day schools. And
I got to get into one of those schools, Jim.
I have yet to have a student walk away from that and say, that was probably the best money I've ever spent. I've got the equipment. Now I need to learn it.
Yeah.
And we go through a whole lot of principles about ballistics, internal, external. We delve in highly into wind and how to read wind.
Yes.
And wind is the most non-deterministic factor in making a long-range shot. Technology can help you, but it's not going to give you a wind hold.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to read that mirage. You've got to be able to read that vegetation moving, those seed pods floating through the air. Whatever it is, you've got to calculate all that in your mind and come up with a wind hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's an art. It's a combination of an art and a science.
Jim, I didn't want to bring this up. It's too soon for me to even talk about it. But this is exactly what I alluded to on the phone yesterday. 4 days ago, I missed a bear 650 yards. And I am proficient with that Hunter Elite.
Right.
Really am. Mm-hmm. I mean, out to 800, I feel good. And we got in this situation, ranged this bear. We couldn't get any closer. I mean, it was like, this is the shot I'm going to get. I've got the equipment. I can shoot the gun. I did not factor the wind. And so we were on this ridge shooting, and the bear was on the other side of the canyon. And it's almost like we were on the, just right on the point of this ridge, almost on the back side of it, because we were not trying to get totally out in the open, you know. I mean, we just creeped out around just enough, got totally prone, two point prone position, had, you know, a rear bag. It wasn't a rear bag, but I grabbed his beanie. I said, "Give me your beanie," and I stuffed it under there. I mean, just dead still. Took a deep breath, and I was way off. And it was the wind. When we stepped out around the point of the ridge, we realized there was probably a 10 mph.
Oh yeah,
just straight crosswind. It was dropping that bullet left, and I knew better in terms of I should have been thinking about that, but that would have been the longest shot that I've ever taken.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
well, you compensated for the distance to target.
Yes, and I was right on. Okay. I mean, you could see this bear was up against a dirt bank.
Right.
And so
you
knew,
had that.
Oh, it was money.
That's the easy part. We can accomplish that.
Right.
It's the wind. And say a 10-mile-an-hour wind shooting a 7 mag.
Yep. 300 wind mag.
300 wind mag shooting a 212-grain bullet. You probably got about 3 minutes of wind.
Yep.
So you got 3 minutes times six. That's bullets drifting 18 to 20 inches.
Well,
whether it's right
is
or left.
That about exactly what we saw.
So, that's where I talk about the excitement factor. So mm-hmm. you guys were all set up. You got the camera running. You're set up in a prone position, the whole deal. It probably didn't even register in your mind to look on your turret and say, where is the wind hold for a 10-mile-an-hour full-value wind?
It didn't.
But once you do it and shoot it, and that's what I like to see at shooting schools is we hope for a little bit of wind when we take them to the range each afternoon. Mm-hmm. And we typically get that, and it'll be anywhere from 15 to 20 miles an hour.
Hmm.
At the range we shoot at, that wind will actually switch from the east, and then all of a sudden it'll switch and it'll be coming out of the west.
So they've got to
read direction, not just speed.
Right.
But what it does on steel plates or steel animal silhouette targets is it shows them, I can hit that sheep silhouette at 500 yards. But that wind just pushed my bullet 15 yards. East wind just pushed my bullet 15 inches to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not even that strong a wind.
Yeah.
Once you do it and see it,
right.
then you believe it.
Makes it sense. Yeah.
And you know, snipers, they all know wind is everything in making the shot.
Yeah. Well, it was a heck of a learning curve for me, and luckily, I ended up killing that bear. We believe it was that same bear on day five of the hunt.
Right.
At 169 yards, mm-hmm. back in a little coat. I mean, it was just a chip shot. I was able to get down prone. Went through the same drill.
Right.
And just made a great shot at 169 yards.
Good.
But, I really would. At some point, I got to get into one of those shooting schools. I really do.
Well, we're going to have a number of them in looking at some opportunities in Florida.
Mm.
So that may be fairly close to where you're at. We do some in Tennessee too.
Yeah, Tennessee.
Now that I think
really
about.
Tennessee would be closer. I'm just as far from Florida as I am from right here.
Really?
Yeah, Arkansas is like smack dab in the middle of the U.S.
I guess I don't know my geography.
Northwest Arkansas is just like, that's why they said Sam Walton did so good starting Walmart in Bentonville, Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
It's because his shipping center, he's equal distance from every corner of the U.S. But anyway. Right.
But it's the schools are a great investment.
Yeah.
For for anyone that just wants to get into it. And maybe we like to tell people with the scope or with the system, you've basically immediately doubled your effective range.
Double your effective range.
And they may have been only comfortable at 200 yards before. Immediately they're going to be comfortable at 400 yards.
Right.
And then with more practice and more education.
And that's a really good and that's a realistic way to look at what these guns can do for you.
Oh yeah.
Because just because the gun is validated out to 900 yards, just because it can shoot that far accurately, doesn't mean that X guy is going to be able to do that.
Exactly.
I mean, because it really does come down to skill and ability to execute that shot. And there's some people that are really good at it and some people that are probably not as good at it. But to say this gun will double your effective range, mm-hmm. I think that's a good, realistic way to look at it, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
if you're a terrible shot, you're not going to be able to shoot a validated gun at 900 yards. Maybe you're not going to be able to. But with training, you could get better.
What I've seen is, and Jared can validate this for sure, but going into a shot or going into most anything in life, if you go into it with confidence, you're going to be successful. If there's doubt, the odds of the outcome you want are very minimized.
Yeah.
You know, so that's really what we try to convey is, you know, Joe may not ever be a 900-yard shooter, but he can probably get to 600 and feel very, very comfortable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's where he's going to stay. That's where he should stay.
Yeah.
Because the excitement factor.
Yeah.
You know, with that big bull elk that Joe's been dreaming about for the last 20 years is standing over there across the canyon at 500 yards. Well, Joe needs to know that his crosshair is staying in what we call his wobble zone.
Yeah.
And that wobble zone has got to stay in the vitals, core vitals of that bull.
Yeah.
If it's above his back and down into his legs, Joe's not ready to shoot yet.
Yeah.
You know. So
one thing I saw you do or we talked about was dry firing a gun if you have time at an animal.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you see an animal across the canyon, you've got some time, empty the gun, get your position. Dry fire on the gun, see what, you know, the crosshairs drop out of that. You know, where's your wobble zone? You dry fire that thing, the crosshairs stay right where you want, you're good to go.
That's a great technique to ensure that you're going to place that bullet properly on that animal and make a good solid hit.
And that's the thing, too, from a hunting scenario, the longer range animal probably isn't going to know that you're there. You've probably got a little more time. Not always. The bear I was after was moving constantly and kind of heading towards a place that we weren't going to be able to see him again, so I was kind of rushed. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times you would have time.
Sure.
The animal's not alarmed. He doesn't know you're there. You're a long ways from him. And so you take that time to dry fire.
And many, many times, that, you know, they don't – even you take that first shot and say the wind blew it off a little bit, many times with an elk or a deer or something, they don't really even know what happened.
Right.
Bears are a little bit different that way. They're a little more skittish anyway.
Yeah.
They kind of bolt for cover, but you if you need to, you can have a follow-up shot.
Yeah. Right. Hey, as we close down, Jim, what would well, first of all, I want to open it up to you guys. If anything we haven't covered that you want to cover, because there's 1,000 things that we could talk about. So be thinking about that. But here's my question to you. And for somebody that knows so much about something, it might be a hard question. What would you say the number one mechanical component of accurate long-range shooting? Now, and when I say mechanical component, I mean you've got a gun that will shoot, number one. I mean, I think that's probably what you would say, first of all, is you got to have a gun that will shoot accurate out to long range. But what a person could do, either mentally or either just the mechanics of it, is that a fair question?
For me, and Jared probably has a different answer than me, but for me is getting into a stable two-point rest.
Okay.
And we found it at schools, there's a lot of guys that can't seem to get down on in a prone position. You know, their necks are too stiff, or maybe they had an injury or whatever. For that individual, what they need to do is, rather than anybody can go to the range and just start shooting off the bench.
Right.
Well, you're not going to have a bench on very many hunts.
No.
So you need to actually get down and do your practicing and become proficient at what you consider your maximum distance at the shooting position that you're going to be shooting in the field. And some, for some people, that may be a sitting position. So I feel very proficient at 450 yards in a sitting position. Beyond that, it's a little iffy. So for me, a stable position and having practiced in that position for a field shooting scenario.
That's good.
Yeah.
Jared, what?
Oh, no, I would agree. I would say practicing in different positions is probably essential especially when you're going to do backcountry hunting, where you know you're not going to get a prone shot every single time.
Yeah.
So, like you said, practicing while sitting while you're shooting and stuff, I think I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. Very good. Anything else, Jim, that we could cover? Just anything about the guns or anything we hadn't talked about that you'd like to talk about?
I'd just like Jared to talk a little bit. He was heavily involved in the design of what we call our Mountain Scout model of rifle.
Okay.
And what the calibers that he feels are most compatible for that. We've shortened the barrel length.
Yeah.
We've incorporated, you know, titanium action, carbon fiber barrel, et cetera. And Jared can talk a little bit more about that. And that rifle is really made for the mountain hunter, the guy that's going to throw it on his back or on his day pack and go 5, 6, 10 miles in that
but
day.
But still have a really accurate gun.
Rifle.
Before I forget it, what I want to talk about after that is I want to hear the Jim Sessions narrative of the ethics of long range shooting, because I think that's that's a thing that some people, even in the hunting community, don't understand, and I think it'd be good to talk about that. But tell us about the Mountain Scout.
Yeah, so the Mountain Scout was kind of an idea that I had, and I brought it up to other people, and they kind of said let's build one. So we kind of built the first prototype, and what we did there is we started with the new Hornady 6.5 PRC round, which that's just the new hot round right now. And as you see kind of on social media, I see you guys are on social media quite a bit, where you can kind of see the backcountry hunters kind of a big fad right now, where everyone's kind of trying to get their pack as light as they can. You got clothing companies, backpack companies, all trying to shed weight with carbon fiber.
Unless you're like
frames.
Jim and I, and you bring mules and you bring your milk and Raisin Bran.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the way to do it if you can. But for a lot of our customers, I know, are kind of your hardcore backcountry hunters, that may not have the opportunity they can't afford horses, or don't have the opportunity to borrow them from friends or whatever. So they're kind of stuck with backpacking, and so, which a lot of people prefer that anyway.
Yeah.
We started with a 20-inch barrel, Proof Research carbon fiber barrel. We went with the titanium action, our carbon fiber stock. We used our 4-16, our Husqvarna 4-16x42. So once we got that all assembled, we were just under, we're right at 7 pounds scoped, ready to go. We could have gone lighter, we could have explored with an 18-inch barrel, whatever, but we kind of determined that
7-pound range is what you need.
That's what you want, because, and our calibers to choose from is your 6.5 PRC, 6.5 Creedmoor, 6.5 284, and your 7 mag. When you get too light of a gun, a lot of people can't handle recoil. When you have a 12-pound 7 mag and a 7-pound 7 mag, there's a lot more recoil between the two. And so we stayed at that 7-pound, 7.5-pound benchmark, and It seems like through the feedback that we've gotten from them, a lot of people are.
How long have they been in production?
The first one was in the first of the year. The first week of January.
Really?
And I think we've sold.
So we hadn't gone through a fall hunting season with them yet.
Nope.
That's got to be exciting. To have a new rifle system.
We've had quite a few of our dealers and outfitters buy them, and I think we've sold close to 20 so far, and just in these first few months of the year, and they seems like a lot of people are kind of asking for shorter barrel stuff.
Yeah,
because now the a lot of people like to hunt suppressed as well with a suppressor, and then they don't. When you cut your barrel down, you can put a suppressor on it. It's more comfortable with it in your pack, and you're not worrying about your barrel hitting the trees and all that. So
people can see a picture of this gun at longrangestore.com.
Longrange Store, bestthewest.net, on any of our social media platforms we use.
Okay.
My daughter Haley actually used the first prototype November whitetail hunt.
Oh, okay.
Up by my house.
Okay.
And got laid out prone. My wife was coaching her through it. I was filming. And took her a nice 5x5 whitetail buck at 300 yards and dropped it right in its tracks.
Yeah, nice.
So that was...
It's a good-feeling gun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've held one. Very nice-feeling gun. Yeah.
No, we were just a little bit worried as far as when you cut down your barrel length, as far as accuracy problems or anything, but we had no problems with that at all. So
yeah.
And then we're using factory ammo out of the 6.5 PRC. We're using the Hornady ELD match ammo, and it shoots just as good as the 26-inch barrel rifles. Mm.
Well, that's good.
And the bullets perform very well on game.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's exciting. Very exciting. As we close, Jim, I feel like it's a shame that inside the hunting community there's division, but anywhere you go, I mean, in the traditional archery world, there's division where people say this is ethical and this is not ethical. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the way. So that would be one side of the pendulum, all the way to the rifle shooting, where it's like accuracy and precision should be what we strive for at the highest level. And then when you go to that level, there are those that would build an argument that, you know, we shouldn't be shooting game at 800 yards. That's not. And so. And there's different sides to all of it, but I know that you have a perspective on that.
I hope I
didn't open a big can of worms. Well, and I did, but I think it's something that people that we need to hear from you.
I'll try to keep it tamed down a little bit in that regard.
Yeah.
Like you said, we aspire for precision accuracy, whatever the distance, whether it's 300 yards or 600 yards or 900 yards. The individual hunter has got to make that choice of what is his maximum range. Just like anything, you're going to have people that go beyond what's reasonable, 1,300 yard elk, stuff like that. You're going to have that just to prove a point. We're definitely not into that. We're here to help people become more accurate, more proficient. My feeling is with hunters in particular, hunters are the true conservationists, always have been in North America. And we've got to quit fighting with each other. We've got enough enemies taking shots at our privileges and our rights. And we've got to come as one team to the table and protect what we love and hold dear. And if we don't do that, if we just become fragmented and this guy, he's not an archery hunter because he's using a crossbow, and this guy's not a rifle hunter because he shot that elk at 500 yards, there's no room for that.
Right.
People shouldn't even listen to that. And a lot of your older outdoor riders, they keep beating that drum. Well, that drum needs to go away.
Yeah.
People, we use technology through all facets of our life. Why wouldn't we use some technology to become more proficient and ethical in taking our shots at game animals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's...
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, I really like what you said there about the core mission of what you guys are doing is to help people become more accurate. I mean, so it's not... You know, there's the far spin of sometimes what people perceive from zero real knowledge of who people are, but, you know, and they just say, oh, these are the guys that are trying to kill animals at 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
And that's just not, that is propaganda. That is not who you are.
No.
But you have equipment that's able to do it.
Sure.
And why wouldn't you?
The farthest I've shot anything myself on film is 680 yards. I don't have anything to prove to anybody.
Yeah. See, I think that would surprise people.
You know. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really do. I think people would say, oh, those guys are out trying to, you know, do something. And that's what's so refreshing as I've got to know this company is that you're trying to get people more accurate. I mean, that's what you do.
I will say this in closing. We get pictures, hundreds of pictures a year from our customers. And what we're seeing, this trend, you know, it used to be, oh, this was a 180-inch mule deer buck. We're not getting the score of the animal anymore. We're getting the distance to target. And a guy is feeling a very strong sense of accomplishment because he was able to dump that mule deer at 780 yards and make a clean one-shot kill.
Yeah,
he knows he accomplished something because he had to do everything right for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a whole different medium of gauging success.
Yeah.
It's an accomplishment to be able, I mean, the journey to get to be able to shoot like that in the field is a big deal.
It's a skill set that no one's born with. You have to learn it.
Yeah. Well, you know this just from your history with me, Jim. I came from a bow hunting background and even a traditional archery background.
Right.
And so for me, what's so cool about being involved and having one of these guns and coming out west, which just in the last 5 years I've been doing, is to go from one side of the weaponry world of how we harvest game from a traditional stick bow to coming to Montana on my mules and using a, you know, 300 Win Mag, 100 Elite.
Right.
And to me, that is, I like that. I like that spectrum.
Right.
And I think I think that's important for listeners to even understand is that sometimes the long range world could be, it seems like a big jump, but it's a surmountable jump, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, anyway,
a lot, you know, we hear it a lot from back east that they talk about. Well, I don't need that. We never shoot beyond 200 yards.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they don't shoot beyond 200 yards because they haven't thought about, well, I can get up on that knoll and I can cover down through this valley, and the far end of that valley is 400 yards. It's about a thought process that I can hunt different now. I can stay out of that animal's core area, stay on the fringes, and not disturb him. And I'm going to increase my probability of success exponentially by doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a thought process.
I see. Yeah, just like with when you're carrying a stick bow, you know you got to get right in his grill.
Right.
It changes the way you hunt.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think all of us, at one point or another, you know, I bow hunted a lot myself back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, and still do.
Yeah.
I'd love to go bow hunting with a good crossbow and one of our scopes.
Yeah. 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 So. Well, hey, this has been an awesome conversation. It's good to be here in Cody at the global headquarters here. I always see some incredible animals when I come in here. There's big mule deer and sheep and grizzly and black bear. And what do we got? We got elk and all kind of critters around here. It's fun to see. Well, hey, thank you guys for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, thanks for stopping in.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.